Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
They quoted Kim as saying, "I did not have authority to deny those because the parents knew what was best for their kids." So if Kim were superintendent,
that's not true.
She would be granting Rolex
it's
watches.
It's not true. I would not grant Rolex watches.
Also on the advice of counsel, I move that we refer allegations of potential perjury by the sheriff to the Arizona Attorney General's office and to direct the county administrator to do so on behalf of the board.
We are talking about making sure that we don't have adverse actors coordinating in concert to obstruct the educational opportunities of Arizona kids.
Whether it's I make a point on a show like yours or in an open hearing, they don't want to give specific answers because they probably at this point they realize that they've made a number of mistakes.
Have I been an infantryman on the front lines in a battle? No, I have not. But I can take care of those infantrymen because I have been doing this job for nearly 40 years.
And joining me to talk about an Auditor General report on the state's ESA program, a dispute over the eligibility of a newly appointed county official, and more, are Daniel Scarpinato of Winged Victory Agency. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning.
And Mike Hayner of Lumen Strategies. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Daniel, let me start with you on this ESA report. The Attorney General's office, the Auditor General's office, basically found some instances of fraud and purchases that shouldn't have been allowed. But it seems like the bigger issue was that there's almost the environment that would allow more of this. So it's almost like the Auditor General said, we don't know that there's widespread problems here, but we also don't know that there's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my takeaway here is fraud is bad. Okay. And this is why conservatives are generally skeptical of large government programs, which this is one of those at this point. And so there is major disruption happening in the education sector. You know, the largest kindergarten class ever in Arizona was 2012. It's been on the decline since. Last year, only 62% of parents chose a traditional district school to put their kid into. AI is fundamentally changing our economy and what education is going to look like. So regardless of what happens with this program long term, there is going to be an upheaval within the education system over the next decade that's going to fundamentally change this, and choice is going to be important. So we have to get this right. This program is going to exist in some form no matter what happens at the ballot this year, because actually it's interesting. Democrats are no longer talking about getting rid of the program. And so
Well, there are two competing ballot measures dealing with this
program. But both of
them
would leave it in place and there would still be families on it. And so this is a technology issue. Other states have followed us, like Texas, Utah, Iowa, and they've gotten this right. There's an RFI, RFP process out there to open this up. And as I've been able to walk through the current program with parents, it just seems like it's very clunky. I think some of this is people accidentally purchasing things through their Amazon account, which is linked. There's a lot here that could and should be fixed. And so the treasurer is not wrong that there are things that need to be fixed about it. The policy is there to do it. It's an implementation issue.
Well, so Republicans, Daniel, have been really resistant to putting any kind of changes in place in terms of what critics would call guardrails, trying to, you know, maybe funding more auditors at the Department of Education, making sure that, you know, some of these purchases aren't unauthorized. Might this report be the thing that changes that?
Well, I would actually challenge that. Republicans did propose more money for people at the department. The Democrats opposed that. And I also think, yes, I think the answer is people do want to get this right. I think that there needs to be focus on how to you could hire 100 people. I mean, with AI and technology, you can prevent a lot of this without humans reviewing every transaction. I actually think part of the problem right now is that that is how they're doing it, is that people are purchasing things and then we're going in and looking at all of them. I think so much of this could be done at the front end with technology.
Do you see changes to the program, Mike, after this report?
God, no. I was going to agree with Daniel, but Republicans have their head in the sand on this. They talk about waste, fraud, and abuse constantly in every government program except this one. This is a cash cow, and it's allowing people to do whatever they want, and there is no interest by this legislature to make any changes to that program.
Do you think it will have an impact on the superintendent's race? I mean, it was sort of one of the issues that got Kimberly Yee, the state treasurer, into the primary against public school superintendent Tom Horn in the first place. Is there any reason to think that this will not continue to be an issue in that primary?
No, I think it will be an issue in the primary. And again, there are folks in that will vote in that primary that, again, think this program shouldn't have any guardrails around it. And if you look at education in Arizona, where I agree with Daniel is, like, we have a reckoning coming in the fact that we have declining birth rates and declining enrollments, and we're going to have to realign the K-12 system. The challenge is right now we have three different educational systems. We have the traditional K-12 system, we have the charter system, and now we have this ESA system. They all get different amounts of money, and they all have different sets of rules. And if you look at any bill that is offered at the legislature, they generally say we're going to put more rules and regulations around the traditional K-12 world, not so much the charters, and nothing for the ESA program. That seems to be a bad way to run a railroad.
Daniel, do you think that this report could swing the Republican primary for state school superintendent?
No, I don't think this report is going to do that. I would prefer if you agreed with me next time, Mike. You should have gone with your instincts. Look, this is fundamentally an important program, and parents should get to choose what to do with their children, their education, and their dollars. And so the good news is the issue has changed a lot. It's still partisan in nature, but Democrats have actually ceded a lot of ground and accepted that parents want school choice. And the question is, how do we get it right and how do we preserve it?
Is there time, given where we are in the legislative session, I'll ask both of you because you both spend time with the legislature, is there time to do anything about this program? And maybe is there the will in an election year to do anything about this program in 2026, Mike?
No, as I said, this Republican legislature and the folks negotiating the budget, because that's probably the last place that we could make changes to the ESA program, are not going to be okay with making any changes to that program. They're going to say no.
Well, I mean, House Speaker Steve Montenegro has said that, you know, these issues that the report brought up need to be addressed. Do you think he's not looking to actually do that? Or maybe he is and the caucus isn't?
Not in this session.
Not in this session. Daniel, do you think there's time this year?
Well, I don't believe that there necessarily need to be policy changes. I do think there need to be implementation changes. Shockingly, government isn't good at everything, and I think there's room for improvement.
Okay, Mike just made a shocked face when you said that government isn't good at everything, by the way. Let me ask you guys about a story out of Pima County where the sheriff, Chris Nanos, has been in some hot water with the Board of Supervisors. There was some talk that the board might try to remove him from office. Instead, they decided not to do that, but instead refer his case and allegations of potential perjury to the attorney general's office. I guess, Mike, in a sense, it's good for Sheriff Nanos that he wasn't removed from office, but maybe not great that he's going to have the AG's office looking into him.
Yeah, you never want to have that. But obviously, Sheriff Nanos or the Board of Supervisors, I don't think is able to remove him for whatever indiscretions that they've alleged. And so referring him to the attorney general's office is probably the only thing that they really could do.
Daniel, we'll call on your Tucson roots here. I mean, Nanos has been under fire for a little while now with various constituents in that community. How big of a potential problem is this for him politically, do you think?
Well, it seems like a problem. I mean, it's a very one-party rule county, Democrat, and the Democrats were highly critical of him, even though they didn't remove him. They, you know, their comments were pretty harsh. And so that tells me that there is some there. And frankly, this is really a result of a national, international spotlight shining on someone who was really not prepared for that moment around the issue of Nancy Guthrie, Savannah Guthrie's mother. And he's kind of had several stumbles. And so people are now starting to look around and vet more than they do in a Pima County sheriff's race.
Might this be, I don't want to say the end, but like, could this be a real problem for his political future to the extent that he might want to have one?
Well, yes, I don't think he's got much of a future. I think either something's going to happen here. There could be a recall. There's all kinds of things floating around. I also think it's possible this might spark a discussion around, should there be requirements to be a sheriff?
Like in terms of like job
there
requirements? Like you have to have X, Y, and Z experience or something like that?
There are no requirements.
Interesting. Do you think that's a discussion worth having?
100%. If going back to the superintendent's race as well, my feeling is that those positions, superintendent, sheriff, should actually be appointed by the Board of Supervisors with qualifications. Because, again, you're as the Board of Supervisors, you're in charge of the county. And you want a law enforcement official at the head of that sheriff's department that you trust and have faith in and that you could hire and fire. It seems to me to make sense that those types of positions would be appointed.
Interesting. And there's obviously been discussion about other county and even statewide offices of like, why do we elect them? Why do we not appoint them? That kind of thing. It's an interesting perspective.
And again, going back to the superintendent's race. So the governor is elected by the people and then the superintendent's elected by the people. Now they're different parties. So are there education goals in alignment? You would really think you'd want state government to be aligned in what they want to pursue from an education standpoint.
More like a cabinet kind of situation than
yes.
Every separate office. Interesting. Mike, let me start with you on Attorney General Chris Mays has taken steps to remove David Marshall from the office of Navajo County Recorder. This is somebody he started the year as a state legislator, was in running in the primary as a Republican to be on the Corporation Commission, resigned from the legislature, was appointed as Navajo County Recorder. But a number of people are saying he's not constitutionally allowed to hold that office.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The Constitution says that a legislator is not allowed to hold another state office, including a county office, in the term to which they were elected. The term, even though he resigned, the term runs through January of 2027. So I would agree that he's not eligible to take that office.
Daniel, I mean, with the stipulation that none of the three of us in this room are lawyers, clearly there was some speculation that if he took this appointment, that there would be a challenge. Do you think that there's a chance he could be removed from office?
Well, in the scheme of constitutional crises, this one feels low. But I do think there, even the attorney general acknowledged that there isn't really any precedent here. And so, you know, the courts will make a determination and we'll have some clarity. But I think his argument is that the law is not clear cut. And so the courts will make a determination. And then, you know, if it is vacated, there'll be a process to fill his replacement.
I mean, I guess if nothing else, we will get some precedent on this, right? And maybe the courts will issue some guidance on does the term to which a person is elected, does that include the time of the actual term or just while they're actually serving the office?
Correct. And that's what we don't know. But you know, one of the interesting things to me is you've seen this year a ton of special elections around the country for legislative seats. You know, we don't do that. You know, so there's no chance of this seat swinging or anything really changing with the legislature other than, you know, a different legislator in this seat. So
it has to be from the same party.
So there isn't really, to me, any real huge consequence to this.
Other than to David Marshall, who wouldn't be the county recorder anymore or a legislator or potentially a corporation.
I guess the question is which job's better. And, you know, I don't exactly understand the, you know, desire to stay down at the state capitol, but, you know, hey, whatever floats his boat.
Well, clearly he didn't want to. He wanted to be a Navajo County recorder.
Sounds more fun to me.
From a pay and a driving perspective, I think that being the county recorder is much, much better job.
Certainly put fewer miles on the vehicle, that's for sure. Mike, our U.S. Senator Mark Kelly, he and Pete Hegseth just can't seem to stop bickering with each other. Hegseth says the Department of Defense is going to look into Senator Kelly after Kelly made some comments on one of the Sunday morning shows about the U.S. munition stockpiles based on the war with Iran. Kelly says, "Mr. Secretary, you said this in a public hearing. Why am I like? What's the deal here?" It seems as though sort of getting around all the bickering, all this stuff has seemed to be really good for Mark Kelly.
Very good for Mark Kelly. And again, the appetite for going after your political opponents in this administration seems endless. But as Kelly pointed out, I don't think Hegseth actually said this in a public hearing, and I don't think Kelly put it in a confidential signal chat with a reporter. So this is just, again, I don't like you and I have the ability to make your life miserable. And that's what this is.
At a certain point, Daniel, like, does Hegseth recognize that he's elevating somebody that maybe otherwise wouldn't be elevated quite so much?
I don't know, but I agree with a lot of what Mike said. And it's fascinating to me because 8 months into office last year, Ruben Gallego went to Iowa to fan the flames of a presidential run. And now you kind of look at these two senators with all that's transpired over the last few weeks and you say, okay, Mark Kelly, if he wants to run, looking pretty good, getting a lot of good national press. Ruben Gallego, not so much, but that might be for another show.
Well, and Kelly has always been known as somebody who raises a lot of money. We've seen that those numbers just go up, pardon the pun, astronomically since the whole you don't have to obey illegal orders controversy going on.
Yeah, I mean he's through him and his wife's network, they've been fundraising powerhouses, and so I think he's ambitious. I think he does want to do something beyond this, and so we shall see.
And remember it. Every human that's elected to the United States Senate thinks and wants to be president, regardless of what they say.
Well, and he's not been shy about saying that he's seriously thinking about it. I mean,
right.
To your point, a lot of people, especially before the midterm, will say, oh, you know, I'm focused on the midterms. I'll think about it at the proper time. He has been very clear about saying, I'm taking a serious look at it.
Yeah. And again, in this day and age, you have to. 20 years ago, campaigns ended. Somebody was elected and the campaign ended. Now we just have endless campaigns. You're constantly running. It doesn't matter for what. You're always on and you're always in campaign mode. You're raising money. You're going out to Iowa. You're going out to wherever. You're trying to build your network for whatever it happens to be that you think you might want to run for next.
Yeah, interesting. All right, guys, a couple minutes left. Daniel, I want to ask you about a piece in the Washington Post late this week written by longtime columnist George Will, who was writing about your former boss, mm-hmm. Governor Doug Ducey. And it was sort of a fictitious campaign announcement for president from Governor Ducey. What George Will imagined or maybe wanted Doug Ducey to say in his campaign announcement. And it seems like the general theme was, I will make the presidency boring again.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. George Will is, in my view, kind of the pope of conservatism. He spends a lot of time here in Arizona. He loves baseball. He's written a couple books about it.
Yeah.
And he's a big fan of Governor Ducey, as am I. And I think he was painting a picture of what a lot of conservatives would like to see, which is a return to a very traditional conservatism that is not just conservatism in policy, but in style.
Hmm.
And I think Governor Ducey and a lot of other governors represent that in how they conduct themselves and how they govern. So, you know, if the governor announces for president, I'll be the first one to jump on board. I don't believe that's going to happen. But I'm also not convinced, and this is me speaking, and he might not like me saying this, but I think he still has a lot to offer in some capacity in public service, whatever that is in the future, and he's got a lot of good years ahead of him.
When you say that that what George Will wrote was something that a lot of conservatives are kind of longing for, do you think that would be enough conservatives for someone like Governor Ducey to be successful in a Republican presidential primary?
You know, somebody once described to me that when Americans elect a president, it's kind of like when you get out of a bad relationship and you want the complete opposite. And so, you know, you look at, okay, you know, George W. Bush produces Obama, Obama produces Trump, Trump produces Joe Biden, et cetera. And I do think that probably the next president might be somebody none of us are talking about and is probably going to be a very different kind of person, whether they're Republican or Democrat.
Yeah. And while I agree with Daniel on the at least on the point that, and I don't think this is a conservative want. I think this is a lot of Americans want the presidency to be a little less in your face 24/7 and just go do your job and make my life better. And that's not what's happening today. The president is in your face 24/7, and he's not making our lives any better or any easier.
Well, and I'm going to paraphrase something that George Will wrote because I don't have the piece right in front of me. But he basically said, you know, you'll go weeks without even knowing I'm here, basically saying, you know, Governor Ducey is the kind of candidate, and to Daniel's point, maybe the kind of candidate that some or a lot of people want, to just sort of do the work, not on TV every day, not posting on social media every day, just kind of doing the job.
I think that's what a lot of us want. Again, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, I just don't think we want this constant barrage of the president in your face.
That's why Mike and so many other Arizonans were such a fan of Governor Ducey and his leadership.
Speaking of tongue being firmly planted in cheek there. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Mike Hayner, Daniel Scarpinato, thanks you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.